Hello, I'm Rabbi Iggy, and welcome to Tattoos and Torah. Hello, and welcome to another episode, a special episode of Tattoos and Torah. We have a guest today who I'll introduce in a second, but this is a special episode. It's June, it's Pride Month in New York, so we have a nice episode for you, talking also all things pride and queer, well, I don't know if all things, but some things. Hello, Laila.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So Laila, you know, we're going to have a conversation about, as I said, all things queer, but LGBTQI+. But what is really interesting is a paper you just wrote, right? And just presented and accepted, right? Tell us a little bit about it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so a little bit about me, I guess. I just finished my master's degree in anthropology from the New School for Social Research. And I did my master's project on sort of the relationship between tattooing the body and healing, and how when you treat the body as space itself rather than just, you know, a physical thing that exists in space, you sort of have the agency to create a version of that that is authentic to the mind and to the body. So I did a lot of ethnographic work with my queer friends and queer tattooing communities around the city to sort of show how you could use the body to heal the mind through pain as praxis rather than something. Well, we can get more into the nitty gritty of, you know, the secular body versus the religious tradition in a little while. But, you know, the like secular healing spaces to, like hospitals or doctor's offices or places that are medicine forward, let's say. Usually treat pain as something to be totally eliminated from the experience of being alive as a body. But if you sort of embrace pain as a mode of healing, it can affect everything in different ways.
So, for anybody who's listening to this podcast, Tattoos and Torah, you could see how this is a perfect fit in the whole, and also add the queer element to this. So this is a fantastic conversation. So I guess we should start with pain, right? And think about a little bit about this, right? So I wrote a while ago an article called To Love Your Pain, right? Mm-hmm. That sort of that I pose, and tell me if that sort of like fits with some of the findings and the research you've done, right? Mm-hmm. I pose that pain is the differential of our humanity. That it is through pain that we connect to ourselves and to others. That is sort of like, right, the perfect life, the painless life, the gilded life is not just boring, but it is sort of like kind of, right, it sort of detaches us, right? So like if you see something that's perfect, you feel like that's not me. But when I share my pain, right, and I'm talking about sort of mental, spiritual pain, not just physical, although we'll talk about physical pain.
Totally.
Right? When I share my pain, that's what people connect, right? When I share my story, when I share my trauma, when I actually am open and vulnerable and authentic, then I have much more ability to connect and other people to connect with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something that stuck with me during my early research for this project that's had a lot of iterations and probably will as I, you know, continue my life as a researcher. This is not published yet. It's just sort of a passion project and a, you know, a little master's degree project. One thing that really stuck with me is there's this book. You know, it's, I hate the word seminal, but we use it a lot in the academy. It's called The Body in Pain. It's by Elaine Scarry. And one of the lines in it is that pain has the capacity to break and unbreak worlds. And, you know, moving on maybe a couple hundred pages, where when pain becomes visible on a surface, not necessarily the surface, it then also has the capacity to move into a shareable world. So when I was looking into tattooing, it was kind of like, you know, the artification of the body was almost an aesthetic consequence of pain and this connection, between the self and the body that it lives in. But also, I mean, if we're, I, most of my work was on contemporary tattooing practices, which is based on when the individual makes a choice to, you know, go get a tattoo from an artist, or they, you know, there's a lot of consent at play, and there's a process, it's more ritualistic, but there's also, you know, the history of body scarification practices that were used to show community. You know, signs and symbols marked onto the body to display power in different ways, where, you know, I mean, as Jewish people, we're sure no stranger to tattooing as a way to strip agency of people, right? Or, you know, people in concentration camps were given numbers to sort of dehumanize them.
Right. One concentration camp, now, by the way. In Auschwitz, one concentration
camp. Yeah, for sure. You know, I remember one of the first things my mother ever said to me, she'll get mad at me if she ever hears this, where she was like, I was like, oh, I'm getting a tattoo next month, my first ever one. And she was like, oh, what's it going to be? Numbers on your arm? And I was like, no, we're past that. We're reclaiming that. So, we're reclaiming our skin.
I don't know if you'll, if it will surprise you or not, but right. So I have tattoos, of course. You can't see Layla, but she has tattoos, right? And we're both Jews, and, yes, and we'll talk about that too. But actually, I have a tattoo that has part of the tattoo is my grandfather's Auschwitz number tattooed on me.
Wow. What was that like?
It was intense. It was very intense. Yeah. You know, so the whole tattoo itself is a sort of an anatomical heart. And I got it in Antwerp, which is where my family's from and where he was from. And right, I collect tattoos from different places I go. So it has the anatomical guy. And I said to the artist, this really talented, super talented young woman, I want this number in. And and she's like, okay, cool, whatever. And at some point while she's tattooing, it's a pretty elaborate tattoo. It's kind of like woodcut style. She asks me, well, what's the number? And I tell her. And the needle stops.
Yeah.
And in my head, I was like, ooh, did I do the wrong thing? Like, did, should I not have told her? Right? Like, what if she stops now? Like, right? Like, what if this too much? Yeah. What if she's a Nazi? I mean, right? So, like, she.
Oh my God!
She's like, she. It's funny because the response was, she was so moved by it that. Yeah. But I can tell that some people, of course, if I tell them this too, although now I just told it the entire world, that would really see this either as blasphemous or problematic, or right, so like people would, some people would be offended by this. For me, it was a way, just to say, as a way to reclaim a number that was on my grandfather's arm, right? And I'm fairly proud to sort of to have that on me in that sense connection, and not because of what they did. Right, the Nazis, but because of what my grandfather carried, and he was proud that he was a survivor,
as he should be. You know, we all should be. Right. Yeah, I'm like thinking about those sort of efficacious symbols of healing that aren't always so explicit,
right?
And they're really beautiful, and nobody could have gotten there without these different types of pain. Right. You know,
so it's funny because that's right. I don't know about you, but that's one of the number one questions I get, right? When people see my tattoos, right?
Yeah.
Does it hurt?
Yes.
And yes, of course it hurts. Sometimes really badly. But it's interesting, right? Because sort of the work that you're doing, like that's one of the first questions.
Yeah. Well, that's actually how this started. I was in a course on the anthropology of religion and secularism and the divides between the two, and actually how, you know, it's like anything, it's not so black and white, and, you know, how definitions create each other based on the absence of one thing or the other. And we had a week on pain, and we were reading about the secularization of pain, about sort of put a pill in it mentality of like casting the soul away into the religious sphere. And secularism was sort of focused on, I mean, I'm going to get this wrong. If anybody's an expert, I'm so sorry. Don't take my degree away. But it was, you know, the non-religious. So it was like, bodies that are in pain should be managed.
Right.
And we don't need pain because we don't have suffering, because the soul is absent from the solution here. Because the soul doesn't, and this is like very sort of William James era psychology, when they started casting the soul away and pathologizing more mental illnesses and afflictions like that. So we had a week on pain, and I was asked by my professor, where are some places you go to experience pain explicitly? And a lot of folks said hospitals or boxing rings, like things like that. And I immediately thought of tattoo shops. And then I was sort of thinking about the aesthetic of the tattoo shop and how it is sort of ritualistic in a way to go to a place that's not a religious space nor a secular space per se, when you think of healing.
Right.
You know, it's not a synagogue. It's not a surgical center.
Right.
It is a place where you go. And there are health codes, you know, there are sort of sterilization protocols, and there are things that mirror both, but there, it's sort of this third space. And then I was asking myself, why do I do it to my own body? Why do I love it so much? And even like the answer of, I want to look cool and punk, is deeper than just that, because it's like, well, where do I want to fit in in this society? Where do I feel like I belong? Where is my community? And can this pain help me get there? But then even beyond that, rather than, you know, just wanting to look like I am a part of a counterculture, it had to do with my own body. And then it had to do with healing from other like unseen mental afflictions. And then I found that this was pretty common with a lot of my queer friends, especially, who had felt like their bodies didn't have a place in Western society. I really only worked with people who live in New York and New Jersey, because an MA project is so condensed. You know, I didn't have time or funding to really work with artists closely or anything like that. But a lot of the, almost 100% of the people I interviewed, including myself, said this was a way for me to feel connected to the body I felt estranged from, whether that be from domestic abuse or eating disorder or self-harm or just generally like being outcast for being a queer body in space. And I just went down the rabbit hole of, originally, where do these conversations fit within the divide of religion and secularism? But then I sort of parked that and took it more into, how can pain as praxis create, like, allow the human body vis-a-vis the self to create space to experience life in a meaningful way? And then, of course, as like the Jewish person in me, I was thinking a lot about Anava, and how I used to teach that to, you know, Jewish summer campers and Hebrew school students. And we would always use taking up space as the way to explain humility, like spiritual humility.
Right.
And I was thinking about, when you treat the body as space instead of in space, and take that agency to take up space on your own body through these markings that you get to choose, it's like almost a practice of individual humility within the body, when you're feeling like there is no space for you because of mental affliction.
Right.
So that's sort of where it's sitting right now and where it's headed.
Fascinating.
That was a lot of words.
No, I mean, that's fascinating. I think that's, I mean, all of it resonates with me, of course. And, and for me, definitely there was parts of differentiating, especially from how I grew up, right? And having tattoos, right? Because, right, the number two question, if not the number one question, people who hear that I'm a Jew with tattoos, and definitely if I'm a rabbi with tattoos, are the question of, well, but I heard, but you can't get buried in a Jewish cemetery, right, with tattoos, right? Which of course, would be nonsense, right? So, like, completely not true.
It's an old Bubby's tale.
That's right. It's, you know, it's, I learned a term for it. It's called the zombie fact.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right? It's called the zombie fact. One of my new sort of tidbits that I learned not too long ago. A fact that sort of that refuses to die. It keeps coming up even though it's dead, even though it's sort of not true.
It's so annoying.
So tattoos and Jewish cemeteries, zombie facts. But I would say, you know,
why are Jews so obsessed with death?
I mean, you could go the trauma route, right? You can go the trauma route, or you can go just the thing, which I think is the most positive thing about it, right? And sort of like, I am covered in skulls because of that, which is that it is death that gives life meaning.
Yeah.
If we had eternal life, every moment would not have any meaning to it. You know, it is the finality of something that gives something meaning, right? Sort of it's saving the last bite for last, or right, it's like making sure that like right, so that the finite amount of life makes sure that every moment that we do have is precious, and therefore we have to honor it as such. I mean, so many of us waste it, but we can.
Yeah, I think that actually fits in well to the work on, you know, not wasting time designing your own body. Right. Or at least that's sometimes how I feel, where, you know, sometimes, you know, tattoos are painful, they're expensive, they're, you have to take care of them. But also, I, you know, me and all my friends are like, you know, life's too short. Why not get shovels tattooed on your forearm if you want them? You know, are you going to live a happier life having made the choice to make your body look the way you want it to? Which is such an important part, I think, of queer self-expression and self-expression in general. I mean, obviously not just queer people have tattoos, but if we're talking about that specifically, there also is this element that I kept coming across that I really liked writing about, where with healing, there's this sort of spiritual healing that we're kind of tiptoeing around right now. But there is also physical healing that has to happen as well. I mean, they bleed, they itch, they peel off. It's like absolutely disgusting. You're causing trauma to your skin in order, you know, to have some type of internal reaction to that. But it's almost a freedom to heal along with the skin. There's this physical and metaphysical healing that takes place at the same time. I mean, obviously it's not that simple. It's
I would say some researchers do believe there's some theories and research around it, especially in ancient tribal tattoos, right? Sort of like that, sort of that one of the reasons to get tattoos is that when you actually do tattoo the body, you increase the power of the immune system. That you force the body to produce an immune system around that area, and therefore draw sort of both bloods, nutrients, and sort of like force the body to continuously create an immune response, and that is beneficial to the body, especially with warriors and things like that. So that the sort of you build up more. So there are theories around the actual physical ancient practices of it as a way to have more quote unquote medicine.
Yeah, that's definitely a part of it. Also, there's like so many subtleties with the body and the mind, where if the body heals, you kind of watch it happen. And I don't know, you observe healing, you feel it, you watch something settle. Like, I love watching a new tattoo settle into my skin, and it takes time, and you get to look at it and care for it. And they look so different between day one and probably the year mark.
Absolutely. And then
every month they look different. Yeah. I think my oldest one I have now is like 7 years old. And I'm only 25. I know that's like so, like, that didn't sound hardcore enough.
No, not at all. I mean, right? It's all relative. I mean, you know, it's true that I think that my oldest tattoos are about as old as you, but yes. No, but look, I think that's an important point. And I think especially as we keep talking about, right, so the queer body and the queer mindset, right? The ability to observe a wound, to care for it, and then to watch it heal and then change, right? The scar being what you're looking at, right? Is in fact an actionable, non-religious, practical spiritual practice, right? The ability to observe your healing, right? Allows you to not just have a reminder of, right, the ability to heal both inwards and outwards, but the patience, the grit, tolerance, right? You said, the itching, the pain is a practice. And I think for a lot of people, that's part of it. Not to fetishize it, right? But to allow us to sort of to think about it, right? It's interesting. I don't know about you, but again, 20 odd years ago, right? So like my first tattoo, and it was of course like fraught, and I didn't know, blah, blah, blah. And eventually, okay, sort of I got it, and as soon as the needle hit my arm at the time, right? Mm-hmm. As soon as it did, I already was thinking about the next tattoo.
Duh. It is like insatiable.
It's insatiable.
Which is so interesting because it hurts.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I did a lot of work, and I plan to continue in this really interesting pocket of research on the body about why people experience pain on purpose. And for folks experiencing mental anguish, it's almost meditative. It's like all of the energy in your body flows to that one point of pain, and you can only think about, and this is, I'm speaking from experience right now, or like the only thing, and from research, but that's what happens when you do right. auto theory, when your life just sort of becomes a sequence of research projects. Where like the only thing you can really think about is the fact that your body is in pain, and like maybe triggering fight or flight to combat anxiety isn't the best method. But when you're in such a controlled environment, I mean, I'm lucky to have been able to you know, seek out artists I trust and go into these spaces that are, I live in Brooklyn, so there's a pretty vibrant queer tattooing community right. where I'm often not tattooed in sort of hyper masculine heavy metal walk-in street shops. And I have also, I respect that. Like, I mean, there's nothing sort of cooler than walking in.
Some of them on purpose, right? Some of them are very like classical old school tattoo shops in New York and Brooklyn that I know I'm going to go get into a bro situation. Right.
Yeah.
But I wanted that tattoo, right? I wanted an old school, style vibe tattoo, and some of them are right. So like most precious prized tattoos was done a really long time ago at one of the very first sort of all female queer spaces tattoo shops in San Francisco.
I love that.
Yeah,
but really even with those shops, it's like, you know, there's a trust that you're not going to be like killed right. or harmed maliciously, like right. the tattoo itself is painful, but you know, there's the consent form. Right. I mean, it's a practice along what they're calling now in this sort of new wave of bioethics is the consent continuum, where, you know, you go in, you express, I want this, you sign the waiver, you have, I was actually in a shop recently that had a trauma-informed tattooing for clients pamphlet about like, do not be embarrassed if you're feeling too much pain. Like, here are some things you can ask for. Right.
I love that.
It was amazing. But you're in these spaces where you can almost trust your practitioner to perform this sort of trauma healing body work on you, even though it's painful. And just let your mind just focus on getting through the pain. Because, I mean, there's a part of you that knows it's not that serious, and maybe you can tap out at any time. And also there is the element of like, sure, this hurts, but it doesn't hurt as bad as what I'm experiencing from, you know, whatever is
looking my body without it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like, you know, I can speak personally as like a survivor of domestic abuse, where like a tattoo hurt me for 2 hours. This is the first one I got that sort of set off this whole train of healing within the body, but like it didn't hurt nearly as much as what I was experiencing, right. even though it was, you know, that physical pain versus mental pain line is so frail, right. you know, and it allowed my body to have like, or my mind to have 2 hours where it just sort of, the only thing that mattered was that I had to sit still and get hurt.
Right.
And I paid somebody I trusted to hurt me rather than being hurt by forces I couldn't control. Right. And that control over the experience is really good for me.
No, I think that's fascinating.
I had a really bad obsessive compulsive disorder.
I think that's fascinating. I think that's really important, right? Because you said, like, right, other places we mm-hmm. go for pain. And I was thinking, of course, like running a marathon or right, the gym yeah. or even like fasting, you know, so different diet.
Yeah. Right?
But what keeps coming to mind, right, other than sort of like the very implicit kind of sexual connotations, but we'll talk about that in a second in terms of consent and pain, whatever. But importantly, how mirrored it is for me for recovery, mm-hmm. right? So that in yeah. recovery, right, what we're asking people is to heal through the pain or to lean into mm-hmm. the pain of feeling the awkwardness, feeling the anxiety, feeling the pain, feeling the craving, right? All these different elements, right? For the duration, for the greater cause, right? For the end, mm-hmm. right? Tattoos of the heart or tattoos of the soul, if you will, right? So like the ability to get the chip or to have a string of recovery and the ability to deal with it, right? There's a mm-hmm. there's a great parallel here for me between sort of like, right? So like, how I choose my pain, right? Because in recovery, I'm going to choose my pain.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, one of my interlocutors who was a close friend of mine, who, no names, but they also used to struggle with addiction. And I was interviewing them pretty early on in the process because they are covered in tattoos and we're pretty close. And, you know, as folks in recovery tend to do, you meet someone for 15 minutes and you sort of slip in the little keywords, right. And then all of a sudden you're talking about, you know, the worst almost overdose you've ever right. had. And he described it as this fine line between liberation and torture right. in his own experience in his body, and where he would often use drugs to sort of create order when he felt disorder, but then also use tattooing to ground him in his body. And there's, you know, those choices of territorializing your skin and your experience right. based on choices and this engagement with pain. And he also, interestingly enough, told me he stopped getting tattoos once he got sober, which is so interesting because now that I have been sober for about a year and a half now, I'm like, wow, I'm so much more connected to my body because I'm not fighting it anymore. And now I like it enough to decorate it rather than hating it enough for trying to kill me that it's like sort of, I don't know. It's like these, everyone has these fine lines. Obviously nothing I'm saying is black and white, you know. Anyone could hear this and be like, she's full of crap. I don't feel that way. And that's like totally fine right. too.
No, these are individual things. I mean, again, like I said, mm-hmm. like I said before, right? I didn't finish that thought at the time. That sort of my tattoo started as and have served me as an armor, mm-hmm. right? So like yes. people see this sort of like, right, I'm not a slight person, right? People see this sort of like mm-hmm. bigger guy with tattoos kind of all over his arms and stuff, and people stayed away from me, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted, right? It protected a much softer core, right? But yeah. people thought, oh, I'm a badass, and I was like, great. Right. So yes, it has a cool factor, but fundamentally they were not designed as such, right? Sort of like I realized that I was using them to make sure that my inner circle is a little further out than what I need to mm-hmm. be so that I can be protected.
Yeah, that's actually interesting because armor did come up a couple of times and I think about that fairly often. There's this amazing book. It's like a book for tattooers, but also I read it as a researcher and a person with tattoos. It's called Could This Be Magic? Tattooing as Liberation Work. It's by Tamara Santibanez, who's they're a queer tattooer around Brooklyn. I think they're in graduate school now doing really interesting research on tattooing in prisons, mm-hmm. but I might have made that up. So if anyone knows, sorry. but there's this line, I just pulled it up, where tattooing can be transformative, a way to create a new version of yourself. A tattoo can be a coping strategy, a manifesto, or a bold declaration. Tattoos are armor.
Right.
And, you know, as this needle punctures the skin, that pain enables the, you know, inscription of marks that represent self-possession, not defeat necessarily. But it's so interesting that you can design those experiences of closeness to yourself, but distance from others. I didn't really think of that.
Right. I think that,
but they are sort of protective in a way.
Yeah,
in more than a just, you know, don't fuck with me.
No, absolutely.
Sort of way.
Absolutely. And some of mine are actually markings designed as protection. I actually have a few tattoos that are designed as talismans to sort of to protect me, wow, protect the soul.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I definitely have one of those. That's a memorial to a family member lost. And every time I look at it, I'm like, they're with me, which is also an interesting dimension when it comes to grief and mourning and the body. But that's like maybe a different podcast. Yeah.
No, but I think the thing, right? Mine are sort of like these angel symbols. But yes, I think this is right. I think that line, right? Because again, one of the things that I'm sure you hear at all is like, people's like, oh, I want a tattoo, but I hear people like, I could never decide on something, or what if I get sick of it, or right, so like, right, I don't know what I would commit to.
Yeah.
It's on me forever. And I keep saying like, one, no, it's not on you forever, just till you die, and then it's gone.
So true. Right? It dissolves right into the ground. Right.
Two, you can also have it removed, right? So like, there are technologies to have it removed today. You can cover it up, right? And for like, more importantly, I said to people like, you know, it's not that precious.
Totally. Yeah. Like, one of my best friends, like, once you start with them, they don't matter as much. And like, maybe that's not true, but that's my experience and a lot of folks I know. Right. One of my best friends told me when I was talking to her about this research that she got the stupidest tattoo she could imagine as her first one to take the pressure off and sort of prove to herself that it was her body and she was able to just make choices. Or I once had a different friend call me ecstatic that they had just gotten this tattoo and they only thought about it for 15 minutes rather than, you know, the previous sort of laboring, layering with symbolism and waiting and choosing the artist, which like there is preciousness in that process as well. But, you know, one of the tattoos I have on my own body that people comment on the most is one I truly only thought about for 45 minutes. I saw on Instagram that this, you know, this queer Jewish tattooer who I love had an opening right after one of my classes and it was Hanukkah. So I was like, I have to go.
The universe wants me to have a tattoo, clearly.
Absolutely. And them and I just talked about Hanukkah and the Jewish body and marking it for 3 hours and it was so natural. Right. And I let him know that I was doing, you know, research on this, but it wasn't an interview. Right. It was just like two queer Jews gabbing. And like somebody else came over to us during the process and was like, why are you guys talking about the Holocaust right now? It is like a beautiful December day. And we were like, we have to talk about it. We both live in queer tattooed Jewish bodies. Our ancestors are pushing us together for
this.
That's
right. That's right.
It was beautiful. It was one of my favorite sort of body affirming experiences I've had.
Right. So, you know, through the research and things you've written, right? Do you find that people actually using this practice of right tattoos and adornment or whatever, right? So like there is also the spiritual healing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As you said, and we started talking about it, right? The ability to choose a pain that we know or we think we can withstand as a way to not just prove to ourselves, but experience that pain and therefore reliving certain amounts of the trauma through a controlled, safe environment and therefore taking the edge off. Is that right?
Yeah, that's definitely a part of it. Or like there is the transformative process that pain allows also, or like it is an experience that with any sense really. But I think pain, for some reason, is more powerful necessarily than pleasure, maybe because there is an element of suffering to it that I don't talk a lot about in my work, just because it did sort of stray from that religion and secularism divide, even though I'm itching to get back into that because it's really interesting. And, you know, contemporary ritual on the postmodern body is something I'd like to go forward with. But yeah, Sorry, my brain is totally in the
No,
clouds
but
right
that
now,
is
thinking
that is
of
ritual,
like,
right? That and I know it too, right? So like we everybody who's ever been tattooed, right? You walk in, you talk to the artist, you give a thing, they come back, you change things, right? You write the consent, you go in, there is the cleaning of the skin, there is the putting of the right.
Yeah.
There's a whole right
the, very the, sacred.
Right?
It's very intimate.
Yeah, it's
it
very
also
intimate.
Tamara Santibanez, they talk a lot about the energy transfer
right.
between the practitioner and the recipient that happens through the machine, but also through the experience of somebody causing you pain in this way,
right.
where like to have somebody shave you
right.
is so intimate.
Yes.
And like, you know, there's always the little joke of first cut is the deepest. Like as soon as they put the first line in or, you know, those check-ins midway, it's like, it's so close.
It's very close.
I also have my own personal rituals on days I know I'm getting tattooed, which is like, you know, you wake up a couple hours before. I always get a bagel beforehand because I always get low blood sugar by the end of my tattoos. But like, you know, and afterwards I take an hour walk and think about what just happened. Maybe I'm just have a sort of spiritual loadedness to me, but the whole experience is deeply transformative.
Right. Well, I think that's the important thing, because I think one of the interesting elements about tattoos, although it's become less and less, and definitely, like I said, when I first got my first tattoos, white people, affluent white people, right, like certain class white people did not get tattoos, right? So like it wasn't as ubiquitous as thing. I was once with my tattoo in a very fancy pool in Europe somewhere, and I was asked to cover it, right? Because sort of like we don't want to see them. But one of the interesting things is the otherness of the tattoo, right? And in that sense, I think there's again this sort of like nexus between queerness as otherness, tattoo people with tattoos as otherness. So again, sort of like that's becoming less and less. And Jews as others, right? So look, one of the things that is interesting about the history of tattoos is that one of the big early influences of tattoos in the Lower East Side in New York was a guy called Lou the Jew.
Yeah, I know of Lou
right?
the Jew.
So Lou the Jew was a Jewish tattoo artist, right? And a lot of people be like, really? Jews tattoo artists back in the, I don't remember, but this is like decades ago, right? And one of the interesting things around it was the sort of that, yes, even though sort of Jews and tattoos do not traditionally go together, but the otherness of the sailors or the criminals or the tattooed people matched this guy's, and in general, the feeling of otherness around the Jewish community as immigrants in the Lower East Side.
Totally. Yeah. I'm like, I also, a lot of this work focused on the other. So the other is like a very hot buzzword in anthropology and the humanities to begin with, which like, of course it is. But I was sort of looking at it as like an intrapersonal othering as well as an intracultural othering. So that's sort of like, it all just is fitting together. Where I was focused originally on like, feeling othered from yourself based on these mental illnesses and afflictions. But then as it moved more into the queer experience, it was so clear that like bodies don't fit in certain places, and that affects the individual in way. Obviously, this is all so obvious. Right,
obviously.
And like Lou the Jew knew it too.
Right. Ooh, like, that rhymes.
I'm a writer nonetheless.
Indeed. But I think, but if we take this to queerness, right, the complete othering of queerness, right, and the adoption of, and sometimes I feel like, if I'm going to be queer and you're going to look at me as other, right, if I'm constantly going to be othered by you, I want to make sure, right, that, like, if you're going to look at me funny, I'm going to give you a reason to look at me funny. So then I know what it is, right? So like, right? So like, the sort of like, right? If you're going to like other me, I'm going to do it with my body type, my body color, my hair color, my tattoo, right? So like, that there's sort of this sort of leaning into the otherness in order to balance out the fact that sort of you're going to other me anyway.
Yeah, one of the most beautiful little vignettes I got from one of my interlocutors during this, one of my neighbors, they have a tattoo on their thigh of a hand with really long, sharp nails holding a key. And on their chest, they have a keyhole. And I asked them about it because I saw them maybe 2 or 3 days after they got it on their body. And they said it was like an efficacious materialization of the notion that they can trust their queer body as a whole world. Mm. And it doesn't just simply exist to counter non-queer bodies. And all of the answers they need, obviously the answers to what questions, I don't know, but all of the answers they need already exist within their own body. Mm. And they should trust their body as a source of queer knowledge in a way that they might not necessarily feel, you know, having not really done the spiritual work to land at wanting to get that tattoo. And I just, like, I really love that.
Although I feel like, right, when they say that, yes, they have done the spiritual work. Because, right, the essence of spirituality, right, the essence of what we believe in, right, mm-hmm. Chuva and Chuva groups and all that is that all the material is within you, right? Somebody can point out some mm-hmm. stuff, but when we close our eyes, when we say the Shema, right, when we mm-hmm. meditate, it is, we close our eyes to remind ourselves that the world inwards is always present, right? The sort of that mm-hmm. we are a complete internal world that, right, that has been created as such, and therefore we have always the ability to go back home spiritually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that ties in perfectly to this argument that bodies exist in space but are space themselves, like, you know, the multiple ontologies of the Jewish experience or something.
But we know, right, we know that to be true also sort of like physically, right? We know that, right, so mm-hmm. the microcosmos organism that is the body is a complete system, right? So, like,
absolutely. It is a whole world sealed off at the skin, right. And but at the same time, the skin is only a porous boundary, you know, like it's an open ecosystem,
much like our soul, right? So, like, it is self-contained, but so susceptible to everything outside.
It's malleable,
right? And like the ink, the body, right? So, like, we mm-hmm. right, we create a pain, a scar, to right, to have it heal on itself, right? Mm-hmm. It's funny, I think about this because I think that sort of that and especially when I first started getting tattoos, and again, like, it was not as accepted as it is today, and people would be like, oh, I could never have a tattoo, and for so many people I say, you actually probably already have one, and they're like, what? And the reason I'm saying this is because I know so many people who, when they were in school, again, so, and they had pencils, they had a sharp pencil get stuck.
Oh, yeah. I have one of those.
By mistake. It wasn't on purpose or something on purpose, but, like, by mistake. And like, right? Mm-hmm. And it creates a mark, right? It's like a black mark. That's a pencil that you sort of got stuck with as a cut. That's a tattoo.
Of course.
That's a very old school stick and poke, if you will.
It is. I used to have a line going down my right ring finger because when I was in high school art class, somebody didn't put the ink pens away correctly, and it stabbed me, and I thought it was so cool.
Right, but that's it, right? That's a tattoo.
Of course. Yeah, now people, every party I go to, people are doing that in the basement. Like, right. It's so commonplace. Of course, these are all queer people, but
it is, and I think, you know, it's interesting because, right, there's most of tattoos, well, of course, are visible, but, like, right, there's a mm-hmm. trend of these invisible tattoos, right, invisible ink, and, right, so, like, UV ray ink, and white tattoos on white skin, right, mm-hmm. so, like, and in that case, right, it is the experience that becomes the most important mm-hmm. rather than the adornment at the end.
Yeah, and the individual knowledge that they've been through that process, where, like, it doesn't necessarily matter as much that people can see you and identify you or see you and connect to you via the shared experience of pain. It's so personal in that case then.
Right.
Or even people who get tattoos in places that other people don't usually see.
Right.
Where they're like, oh, this is for me.
That's right.
You know, I have a friend who shared with me that she has, I've seen this, but she has a gorgeous floral cover up on her upper thigh to cover up self-harm scars from cutting. And, you know, she said it was like a place only people who ever saw her at the beach were going to see. And it didn't matter because it was for her. And every time now she looks at her body, she has these gorgeous blue and white flowers on her. So it didn't matter to anyone except her that she had went through that process.
Right. I mean, that's one.
And an old. Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things. I don't know if you touch on it, but like sort of in the sense of, right, because I do see them sometimes on Instagram, right, tattoos to cover up scars of mastectomies, right, so like birthmarks, right, sort of like stretch marks, different, right, trauma marks, like you said.
Yeah, totally.
Tattoos is, again, not just a reclaiming of the body, but to reinterpret scar.
Yeah, it's all ultimately, I think, about self-actualizing, but the definition of self-actualizing is so complicated. Right. It feels like silly putty sometimes to try to get a handle on what it means. And also acknowledging that having a body is ultimately a process, you know?
It's a continuum.
It is. Yeah, I have a friend who got into a car accident and it one of their tattoos got sliced in half.
Ooh.
And they were pissed off.
I paid so much money for this.
Yeah, they were not even upset that their car was totaled and they had, you know, a serious injury. They were like, not my tattoo. And honestly, I would feel the same way if that ever happens to me. But then they were able to work with their artist once they, you know, once it healed enough to handle ink and totally reworked it. And now it's so different. But it's gorgeous, and it's sort of another marker on the step of living with skin.
A few last questions, right? As we think, did you encounter, or do you encounter, especially after writing this work, on people who are now doing this explicitly, right? Like a lot of what we talk is implicit, right? So like things, but do we find places that sort of like, hey, as a way to deal with trauma, right? Or as a way to sort of look at it, like, how about tattooing as a practice, a technique, a tool? Like,
I haven't seen it. And I will say my research does not touch on the whole world. Right. I mostly worked in and around Brooklyn just because that's where I live and that's where I've been tattooed. And that's where this is happening. So super convenient for me. Not so much in psychological practice and like actual medical spaces per se, but there is a rise in trauma-informed tattooing in the tattooing community that I've seen. Like I said, there was that pamphlet at Somewhere Space, which is in Brooklyn. There are now, you know, workshops you can take for tattooers to be more trauma aware for your clients. I feel more comfortable as a person going to get tattooed to express some more of maybe my own needs. So it's definitely on the rise, at least the consciousness that this is something that people are doing. There also is, there was a bit of a, I don't know what it's called when like something is a trend maybe, but not trendy, but a lot of artists were sort of speaking out about how shows like Miami Ink or LA Ink had been harmful to them as individuals because people sit in the chair and then feel free to, you know, trauma dump for the whole session about how they feel in their body. Where like those conversations are okay, but acknowledging that there is another person too, you know? So these conversations are all happening.
FYI for people. Totally. Some of them do not want to talk. They want to focus on their art and not talk.
Absolutely.
They're not your therapist.
I once had an artist tell me to shut up because he was doing dot work. And I said, okay, but we're both better off for it because the tattoo is gorgeous. There's also a lot of scholarship popping up. I was just looking at the bibliography of my MA project and a lot of research from like 2010 and beyond about this experience in the body and harming it on purpose and like what can pain do for us as sort of folks living under capitalism and living in this quote unquote postmodern body, which I have a lot of feelings about as many intellectuals do. but this amazing book called Hurt So Good. I believe it's The Science and Culture of Pain on Purpose. Mm-hmm. It came out in 2021. And my advisor sent me a link to a tweet about it. And I immediately went to the bookstore, bought it, and read it in a day and was like, damn, this is the book I wanted to write. So like this, it's so we're like right on the threshold of this blowing up, I think.
Or blowing back up, right? So like, right, because if we think about tribalism, right, they've been doing this for thousands of years. We, the Western world, it's like venerated this of the white, clear, washed body, like are just rediscovering sort of this sort of very old tribal practice.
Yes. And that's why at the beginning I did mention that I am only working in North American contemporary tattooing. Right. There is a couple of pages at the beginning sort of situating it in those legacies of non-Western tattooing and tribal marking and also, you know, penal markings and power and war and prisoner tattooing and all of that. But I would like love to just keep doing this. Because it is sort of a when you keep it in the secular space, it just keeps itching at those boundaries, which is so exciting.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, absolutely. No, yeah. You know, again, I mean, as we're wrapping up, I think that the ability to find spaces that are safe for people to be vulnerable, experience pain. For me, very much look like some of recovery rooms, AA rooms, right? The groups that we run at Tuva Center, right? The ability to like, I want you to sit here. I want it as a ritual, right? Here's the disclaimer. Here's the safety, making sure we do no harm. But let's talk about the pain, right? Well, let's talk about how you missed the mark, right? Let's talk about what you do. At the end, right, you'll get an adornment. You'll get something that sort of like helps you. But you have to go, but you have to go through the pain in a safe environment that allows you to get insight, right? And to feel better about yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it is like, you know, even sometimes in the groups you lead where you keep pushing us, you're like, okay, and or like, okay, why? And then just like, you have to really dig deep inside yourself to get through those experiences. Right. 'Cause like, you can do it. And then also there's no shame in tapping out, but also like it really does take a lot of physical and mental endurance to get through a session that's more than maybe 15 minutes just because of the physiological reaction to pain in that way. It really pushes your mind, which I mean, I like it. I mean, people always joke that getting tattoos is an addiction.
It can be, right? So, it can be, but, yeah. But I would say an addiction in the sense of sort of that, like everything else, if you use it as a way to avoid your feelings, it's an addiction, right? If it's a way for you to deal with them, it can become something different, right? And again, you can tap out. Mm-hmm. There's no shame in that. There is sort of the endurance of it, right? So the ability to say, I want this, and this is important to me.
Totally.
Fantastic. Last thoughts, Laila? This has been fascinating.
I just have a lot of connections. I'm probably going to spend the whole afternoon like writing about just like finally not being afraid to take that step to like take this work I've done and apply it to my own Jewish experience, which like for the purposes of like the deadlines and the confines of the assignment and things like that, it's been through a lot of iterations and I didn't want to open up doors to like my own trauma. I wasn't going to be able to go down, but now I'm just like, I'm so excited to keep doing this.
Yes. Well, we're
and get tattooed next week.
That's right. So. Oh, even better. Well, we're all excited to have you on and to continue talking about this. I think this is fascinating, of course, sort of things, and especially sort of like again for Pride Month and sort of like we being able to talk about queer bodies and queer practices and just a queer lens to look at things.
So. Yeah, one of the best things that's happened to me recently of being a queer tattooed person is that I have a tattoo from Mars Hobrecker, who tattoos in Bushwick. And they have a really iconic sort of woodcut style. It's Mars if you know Mars. And if you know someone has a Mars tattoo, they are queer. Like maybe 99%. So I was on the subway and someone had one on their neck and I have one on my arm. So they got my attention, tapped their neck and tapped their arm. And we just were like, hey, it was so fun.
I love that. That's a great, right? I see you. You see me by being seen. Isn't that isn't that all about that at the end of the day, right? Feeling seen.
Yeah.
Because of
our and to any artists listening to that, like, you create that for people. And your work extends beyond, you know, the boundaries of the 2-hour session as well. That's all I can
say. There you go. Laila, thank you so much. For people who want to find you, you're on the internet or whatever, like, you know.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, which is like a pseudo academic Twitter, pseudo just my brain garbage. It's Laila Anthropology. So it's LILAHNTHRO. So it's Lilanthro. That's really where you can find me the most. So yeah.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Laila, thank you again. All of us for listening to this really fascinating conversation. Thank you. Happy Pride, everyone.
Yeah. Happy Pride. Bye.
This podcast was recorded by Tshuva Center. I want to thank our team, Ben Lichman, Grace Sheed, and Sadie Baker-Wax, who make this all possible and make sure that the guests and I sound as best we can. Thank you again all for listening. You can check out our Instagram and our website, right, at Tshuva Center, T-S-H-U-V-A-H, Center, C-E-N-T-E-R, or tshuvacenter.org. We're on all the social media platforms. Thank you. Have a good weekend.